Good evening. In the news tonight, it was the 15th anniversary of September 11th yesterday, but the day for many doesn't get easier. Legislation seeks to stop the flow of arms to Saudi Arabia. Russia and the U.S. have agreed to a truce in Syria. A nuclear test in North Korea has people on edge. Emily's List has actresses on board with a Stop Trump campaign. And New York City moves to divest from private prisons. With these and other stories in New York, I'm Linda Perry, and this is some of the news for Monday, September 12, 2016. Emotions were raw yesterday for many listeners in our area. At St. Patrick's Cathedral, 343 is the number on a banner carried by the FDNY, the number of firefighters killed on 9/11.
I can only imagine what you feel today. I know so many of you have told me the pain does not go away.
Mayor Bill de Blasio.
This time of year is a tough time of year. But I also know you tell me the stories of the joy that your loved ones gave you when they were here with us, the pride they gave you, the way everyone looked up to them because they served in the FDNY.
15 years after the attack on 9/11, the day is never easy for New Yorkers. By 1 p.m. on Sunday, the now familiar reading of the names of those killed on that day was completed. A musician played taps. Among those reading the names, several said the loss of their loved ones still felt as if it happened yesterday, not 15 years ago. President Barack Obama, at a ceremony at the Pentagon, said the nation will never forget the lives of those killed in the September 11th attacks.
We honor the courage of those who put themselves in harm's way to save people they never knew. The question before us, as always, is how do we preserve the legacy of those we lost? How do we live up to their example? And how do we keep their spirit alive in our own hearts?
Meanwhile, peace activists from the World Can't Wait say 9/11 is no excuse for expanding the war on terror, that it has been a justification for U.S. wars of aggression on people in at least seven countries: Libya, Iraq, Afghanistan, Pakistan, Yemen, and Somalia. They held a protest Sunday afternoon in downtown Manhattan. One of their signs said, "Neither candidate running for president will stop the U.S. war on the world. It's up to us."
On this vote, the yeas are 261 and the nays are 145. The bill is passed.
Just before September 11th, the House of Representatives passed the Justice Against Sponsors of Terrorism Act, or JASTA. It is a bipartisan bill which allows September 11th families to sue Saudi Arabia.
JASTA ensures that those, including foreign governments, who sponsor terrorist attacks on U.S. soil are held fully accountable for their actions.
Virginia Republican Bob Goodlatte.
We can no longer allow those who injure and kill Americans to hide behind legal loopholes, denying justice to the victims of terrorism.
Texas Republican Ted Poe.
It's interesting that Saudi Arabia objects to this legislation. Methinks they object too much. The legislation gives the victims' families access to the courts, to the rule of law. And we as a people should be more concerned about these victims of terror than we are about diplomatic niceties with other countries.
15 out of the 19 men who hijacked commercial airliners and used them as missiles to target the World Trade Center and the Pentagon were Saudis. New York Representative Jerry Nadler.
This legislation does not prejudge the merits of any particular case. It simply ensures that the 9/11 families or anyone who may face the same situation can plead their case in court.
President Obama opposes the bill. The White House has signaled that the president would veto it. There's a different resolution which has been brought to the Senate. U.S. Connecticut Senator Chris Murphy, Rand Paul from Kentucky, Al Franken from Minnesota, and Mike Lee from Utah introduced a bipartisan joint resolution of disapproval to block the U.S. sale of Abrams tanks and associated major defense articles to the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia. The Pentagon announced the proposed sale totaling $1.15 billion in August. Another sign from the World Can't Wait's demo in downtown Manhattan said, "Drones bring endless wars." To this message, three U.S. former drone operators joined a lawsuit against President Obama over the deaths of innocent Yemenis in U.S. drone strikes. The Air Force and National Guard veterans Sean Westmoreland, Lisa Ling, and Brandon Bryant said they witnessed a secret global system without regard for borders, which conducted widespread surveillance with the ability to conduct deadly targeted killing operations. The brief said, from their collective experience working on the drone program, they believe the public has been misinformed about the effectiveness of drone strikes and the way they are conducted. Following intense pressure, President Obama released a count of how many civilians died from drone strikes. The figure released is between 64 and 116, but human rights groups argue this figure. They say it is deceptively low. In other news, a week-long truce in Syria agreed upon by the U.S. and Russia and by the government of Syria and its ally Iran has begun. This truce includes a cessation of hostilities in the northern city of Aleppo. But the country's most powerful insurgent groups have not yet said whether they will abide by it. Half an hour before the truce went into effect, violence was reported in several areas throughout Syria. If the truce does end up holding for a week, the U.S. and Russia would begin intelligence sharing and target coordination against the Islamic State group and al-Qaeda-linked militants. In other international news, South Korea activists staged a protest in Seoul on Saturday. They denounced North Korea's latest nuclear test. Protesters chanted Kim Jong-un out and held anti-nuclear Korea signs. UN Secretary General said the UN Security Council must remain united and take appropriate action against this fifth nuclear test. Jocelyn Sambira reports.
Ban Ki-moon strongly condemned the brazen breach of the resolutions of the Security Council. It's the fifth time the DPRK has broken the international norm against nuclear tests.
We are deeply concerned by continuing act of provocation by the DPRK regimes, this time the fifth, the biggest nuclear test. And I sincerely hope that the United Nations Security Council will act in solidarity and unity for the international peace and security and give a strong warning to the DPRK authorities.
Mr. Ban described the East Asian nation's action as unacceptable and warned that it could endanger peace and security in the region. Jocelyn Sambira, United Nations.
Today, South Korea's defense ministry said North Korea is ready to conduct an additional nuclear test at any time. South Korea defense spokesperson Moon Sang-yung said assessment by South Korea and U.S. intelligence is that the North is always ready for an additional nuclear test at the site of the North's five nuclear explosions. In northern Nigeria, in Borno, which is near Chad, hundreds of internally displaced people are returning to devastated villages and towns, recently liberated by the Nigerian armed forces. The UN Refugee Agency, UNHCR, said 16 districts that were formerly controlled by Boko Haram insurgents are now accessible to aid agencies. Daniel Dickinson reports.
UNHCR said it expects the number of returnees to grow in the coming weeks. Concerns remain about the conditions they'll come back to. Some 800,000 who are already there need immediate assistance. Here's UNHCR's Leo Dobbs.
The 800,000 are people who were there throughout the Boko Haram regime, and they are in a terrible state and in great need. But on top of this, we have people who fled their homes in Borno during the course of this insurgency, and now they want to go back. And one of the main reasons they want to go back is because the conditions where they've been staying are so dire.
Many of the returnees will come back to destroyed homes and infrastructure and areas lacking healthcare and other services. Daniel Dickinson, United Nations.
Turning to campaign news, Hillary Clinton will be back on the campaign trail by the middle of next week, this after she took sick at the Ground Zero 9/11 commemoration. Her campaign said she is being treated with antibiotics for pneumonia and is recovering. A CIA director under former President Bill Clinton is now joining Donald Trump's campaign as a senior advisor. James Woolsey, who has been sharply critical of President Obama's foreign policy, says he agrees with Trump's call to spend more on the military. The appointment, according to the Associated Press, comes amid a near daily competition by the Trump and Clinton campaigns to one-up the other in announcing support from national security figures. The Trump campaign is out with a new ad which highlights Clinton's comments that half of his supporters fit into a basket of deplorables. A narrator says, "You know what's deplorable? Hillary Clinton's viciously demonizing hard-working people like you." Trump's campaign says it will spend around $2 million to run the ad this week in the battleground states of Ohio, Pennsylvania, North Carolina, and Florida. And Trump says he wants to debate Clinton without a moderator because he says the system is rigged. This follows widely criticized softball questions by NBC's Matt Lauer last week. The Stop Trump movement has actresses on board who made a video expressing their opposition to the Republican presidential candidate.
So, the Republican Party's nominee is Donald Trump.
And he might be our next president?
Oh, hell no!
He is not going to be our next president.
You know why?
'Cause women! Women can and will stop Trump.
Because if we vote all together, we will decide who the next president will be.
And no way are we voting for the guy who wants to not only ban abortion, but punish any woman that has one.
For the guy who promised to shut down the government to defund Planned Parenthood.
The guy who promised to appoint conservative anti-choice judges
to the Supreme Court so he can overturn Roe v. Wade.
The guy who called prominent accomplished women bimbo.
Dog. Loser.
Fat. Pig. The guy who called immigrants rapists and murderers.
The guy who thinks women who are sexually harassed at work should just find another career.
The guy who has said repeatedly and publicly that he'd like to date his own daughter.
If only she wasn't his own daughter.
Yeah.
Mary Steck, a VP with Emily's List, says it is women who have the power to select the next president.
Emily's List, we are the nation's largest resource for women in politics. We have over 3 million members across the country who want to see more pro-choice Democratic women elected to office. We have a lot of really interesting people who are with us, and there's a lot of creative types. So we had several of the folks who are women who are featured in this video wanted to get involved, and they wanted to have their own voices heard. And more importantly, they want to share their own voices with their networks and reach the power that they have as people who have a loud microphone and share their own stories. So, for example, Diane Guerrero, who is in Orange is the New Black and Jane the Virgin, she's also the honorary co-chair of New American Leaders Project. She's prominently featured in this video, and she really wanted to share her own take on why Donald Trump is completely unfit to be president. Amber Tamblyn from Sisterhood of the Traveling Pants and House. We've got Maura Tierney from ER and The Affair. These are all women who are activists and see the value in sharing their own voice and using their own power to reach others and talk about the stakes in this election.
And in the PSA, it says, as usual, it's up to women, so roll up your sleeves. What are you getting to there?
Yeah, look, women are the ones, again, who decide elections. In 2012, we were 53% of the electorate. You know, I think that there is it's easy to forget that casting a vote is the easiest way to put a stop to something or to vote someone in who stands on the side. I think having someone, these voices, talking about the impact that women can have is something that reaches not only women but men. I mean, we're all talking about making plans for getting to the ballot box in November and making plans to get out there and knock on doors. I think these types of reminders, like the ones in our video today, are exactly the type of thing that every person in America needs to hear, and we're really proud to have so many voices who have joined us in this mission.
Now, you say that 30,000 have taken the pledge to stop Trump. What does it mean to take a pledge?
If you go to our website, it's womencanstoptrump.com. And that is your one-stop shop to get all of the material you need and share the video, share all of Trump's words about that he said about women and toward women. This is a campaign that we launched a couple of weeks ago because we realized that there was a need to educate as many people as we can about who Donald Trump truly is and what his worldview is when it comes to women, where his policies are. So if you go to womencanstoptrump.com, you can not only watch the video, but you can share with on Facebook, on Twitter, on via your own network, Instagram, lots of graphics and shareable facts about what Donald Trump has said about women. The fact that he said that if women want equal pay, you just got to work harder, or that women should be punished for having abortions. These are his own words, and we can't say them enough and repeat them enough to talk about the stakes in this election.
And have you analyzed where the movement to stop Trump is catching on? I'm wondering about some of the red states, Arizona, Texas, Georgia, where Clinton is gaining. Have you looked at where the support is coming from to stop him?
Absolutely, yes. So we have seen a lot of women who, quite frankly, are looking at this election and seeing that Donald Trump is simply unfit to be president. And, you know, 7 in 10 women dislike Donald Trump. You don't get 7 in 10 women in America without Democrats, Republicans, and independents. So it's really incredible to see this groundswell of support for you know, electing someone who's got the right priorities in mind. And that has translated across many of the states that you just spoke about. The fact that now Texas is something that could be in play, that Arizona, usually a state that is pretty solidly red, is now on the fringe. It's exciting to see that there are so many women who are really looking at this election, looking at the choice here, and it's very clear that Donald Trump is just simply not on our side and not someone we want in the White House.
We're not giving that guy the nuclear codes.
We can't let him win. We can't let what he stands for win. So, as usual, women, roll up your sleeves,
because it's up to us.
And together, we got this.
More about the Stop Trump campaign from Emily's List is at womencanstoptrump.com. Turning to local news, our primary is here in New York tomorrow. 63 Senate seats, 100 Assembly seats, and 10 local judicial seats up for grabs. What's important is to go out and vote during this primary, because your choices will determine who will run against each other in the state races in November. What Latino Justice says it will be doing is poll watching. Jose Perez is Deputy General Counsel and Legal Director of Latino Justice.
If we, Latino Justice has an exciting new election protection initiative called Cada Vota Cuenta, Every Vote Counts. We will have volunteers out on polling sites in Brooklyn and Washington Heights, making sure that there are bilingual Spanish language interpreters on site, that every registered voter has the right to cast their ballot. As we saw with the presidential primary, a disproportionate large number of Latino voters, particularly in Brooklyn, had been purged. Why? Is the New York City Board of Elections incompetent? Is there intentional malfeasance to purge voters of color from the roll? Again, many questions that yet to be answered. We will be out there making sure that there is not a recurrence from the primary, from the presidential primary, where many voters were turned away and were unable to cast their ballot.
So if voters are having problems, what would you suggest?
They should immediately contact the New York City Board of Elections. If they had registered and they're being told that they were purged or they're no longer on the rolls, they should immediately challenge that and request an absentee ballot. They should contact the civil rights organizations, the Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights. Latino Justice will be doing bilingual Spanish language election protection. Latino voters, Spanish-speaking voters, can contact Latino Justice. El 13 de septiembre va a ser las elecciones primarias aquí en Nueva York. Justicia Latina, tenemos un nuevo programa que se llama Cada Vota Cuenta. Estamos tratando de proteger los derechos de los votantes hispanos en esta ciudad. Como sabemos que pasó con la primaria de presidencia, muchos votantes latinos no lo permitieron de votar y que lo quitaron. Queremos saber por qué. Vamos a tener nuestros voluntarios en muchos sitios, en Brooklyn y en Washington Heights y el Bronx, para saber y para mirar, que queremos estar seguros que hay intérpretes, que hay gente que han registrado, han hecho todo lo que están supuestos a hacer, que pueden votar y ejercer. Si tienen problemas y no pueden votar, deben ponerse en contacto con nosotros, Justicia Latina, 1-800-328-2322.
Jose Perez with Latino Justice. In other news, a recent decision by the Federal Department of Justice to scale back and eventually end the use of private prisons indirectly impacted New York City's pension funds. It reduced holding values by millions of dollars and led to renewed calls from activists for the city to divest from the for-profit corporations that operate these prisons. Samer Khushid reports.
Stocks of the two largest private prison corporations, the GEO Group and the Corrections Corporation of America, tanked. The stocks plummeted by about 40% in one day. They briefly rebounded and then fell again when the Department of Homeland Security indicated that it would evaluate and possibly eliminate the use of private immigration detention facilities. In New York City, the impact was immediate. New York City's five pension funds together had roughly $20 million invested in the GEO Group and CCA as of May. The investment has likely lost close to $8 million. While the number itself is small compared to the altogether $160 billion pension fund, it's largely the principle behind the investment which has raised concerns. Randy Credico, a WBAI radio host, regular political candidate, comedian, and activist who has been advocating for the city to divest from private prisons for years, said, "It may be a small amount, but morally it's bankrupt, and financially it's bankrupt too." Credico created an advocacy group called End Prison Industrial Complex to push the issue with online petitions. He's organized numerous protests in prison garb outside Comptroller Scott Stringer's office, and his efforts seem to have had an effect. Following the federal government's announcement, Gotham Gazette reported on the pension fund's holdings in private prison corporations and how the federal decision boosted the push by activists for the city to divest from them. Little more than a week later, Stringer and the trustees of the New York City Employees Retirement System passed a resolution to look at divesting from corporations that run private prisons. Stringer said he'll introduce a resolution to look at the issue on other boards he serves on: the Teachers Retirement System, the New York City Police Pension Fund, and the New York City Fire Department Pension Fund. And Stringer also said he'd ask that the Board of Education Retirement System look at the issue. He said, "The time has come to study whether our holdings in private prisons meet both our fiduciary standard as well as our standard to invest responsibly." And these private prison groups, which have been criticized for how they operate, are here in New York City. GEO has an immigration detention facility in Queens, and it also has a reentry location in the Bronx. In the past, the city's leadership has been trendsetters on divesting from increasingly unpopular companies or industries. Following the San Bernardino mass shooting in December of last year, when President Obama made a case for gun safety measures and limits on ownership of high-caliber assault weapons, Mayor Bill de Blasio submitted a resolution to the New York City Police Pension Fund to examine divestment from gun manufacturers. The mayor's message was clear: the city should not be investing in an industry and product involved in countless tragedies across the country, and that the president's executive action was a turning point in the effort to end senseless acts of violence against Americans. For WBAI News, I'm Samar Khurshid for Gotham Gazette.
And that's the WBAI Evening News for Monday, September 12, 2016. The news was produced with Jocelyn Sambira, Daniel Dickinson, and Samar Khurshid. Linda Perry, WBAI News, New York.